Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station. Available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Wednesday evening, November 17, 2010. It is now 7:01 p.m. Central Standard Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. We do have a toll-free number now. It's 888-773-4496. Of course, if you're calling from a cell phone, it doesn't make much difference to most people. So that's 888-773-4496. And you can send this email anytime to comments@libertytalkradio.com. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, Sutton-Associates. That's SUTTON-Associates.net. In his newsletter, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on ContraryInvestorsCafe.com. Liberty Talk Radio is now available via iTunes for your listening convenience. Lastly, I would also like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, good evening, everyone. And this evening we have Andy Sutton with us. We're going to talk about the economy. Of course, Andy is an economist and chief investment advisor for Sutton Associates. Andy will be updating us on all the havoc that's going on in the world today. And I believe we have him on the line right now. Let's get Andy on the line. Good evening, Andy. Is that you?
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Andy?
Well, I'm vertical, and I can't complain.
Very good. You know, I'd like to mention to everyone that we have Andy on the third Wednesday of every month. And what I find amazing, it always seems like you were on last week.
I know. You know, you emailed me the other day and said, you know, it's time to do another episode. And I'm thinking to myself, we just did one.
That's right.
And I looked at it, whoa, it's the third week of the month already.
Yeah. Now, we've done, I think this is the fourth or fifth month that we've done it. And it just seems like we just started. Andy, time is flying by. It is absolutely amazing how quick time goes by. And I guess maybe that could be to our advantage or maybe to our disadvantage as we get older. Well, Andy, I'm so pleased to have you on the program. In fact, what we've done is we've reduced the number of people that we do interview here on Liberty Talk Radio simply because it hasn't given me enough time to rant. And but you're one guy that's a stationary with us. If you don't mind coming back on, we'd love to have you every single week. Yeah, I mean, every single month. Every single week would be fine also.
Definitely okay with me.
That's great. Well, Andy, where would you like to start? I guess there's so much happening in the world, especially in the Eurozone with Ireland. Ireland is doing, I guess, in a way, saying, fine, thank you very much, but we'll I think we'll just default. You don't mind, do you? And Europe is going crazy. Maybe you could shed some light and start out with what's happening over there and how it affects us.
Well, basically what's going on over there is kind of a preview, if you will, of what's going to be happening in America here in a few years, just because of the fact that we're in such a worse position than they are, comparatively speaking. But basically what you have is a situation where these countries are all in debt, their banks are in debt, and now everybody's talking about a bailout, but they don't really want to do a bailout, because if they do a bailout, then there's going to be inflation because they're going to have to print euros, and you have all these things going on. And, you know, my position is that they have a choice. They can either default or they can do European quantitative easing, a la Euro style. What our Fed is trying to do, and basically destroy their currency along with ours. So those are the choices at this point. I mean, austerity is a really nice buzzword, and you know, it certainly could make a difference over an extremely long period of time. But the problem is the hole is so deep that a lot of these countries have gotten themselves into that cutting back a little bit or raising the retirement age by a year or two, it really isn't going to matter. If they want to, you know, remedy these problems with austerity, they're going to have to slash government spending by 50 or 60% across the board, and it's just not going to happen. You know, these societies have become so dependent on government spending, these economies are dependent on it now, and as soon as you try to take it away, really bad things happen, and there's been violence in a bunch of these different countries. There's been strikes, most recently in France, disruptions all across Europe. People are not very really ramped up to have their retirement age picked up by 5 or 10 years and have, you know, socialist benefits cut and all of these types of things. So, you know, and I told people, Joe, this past spring when this started to fester a little bit and then the news media stopped talking about it, you know, a lot of people, you know, erroneously said, oh, well, okay, that crisis is over. It was dealt with. You know, they did the half-trillion euro emergency fund. And I said to people, I said, look, this is going to be back. This is not going away. It's not gone away. And they haven't fixed it with their little bailout emergency fund. And right. Exactly 6 months later, almost, we're dealing with this again. And it's really roiling the bond markets in particular. Obviously, stock markets have been hit over the past few days. So this is just a reemergence of really what's been an existing crisis here for the past couple of months. And they're not dealing with it. We're not dealing with it. Nobody's dealing with it. Everybody's trying to sidestep it, you know, and kick the can down the road a little bit longer. So don't expect these things to go away.
What would happen, in your opinion, if Ireland decides to just default on its obligations? What effect would that have on us? And by the way, we do have a hum somewhere in our system. Is it on your end or our end? Do you have any idea, Andy? Can you tell?
That could very well be on my end. We've been having a slight issue with the phone system here. If it gets to be too much, I can call you back with a different phone. Just let me know.
Okay. Well, it's just humming a lot. Would you like to try the other phone and see what happens? I'm just afraid we may lose our listeners. And what I'll do is, in a minute it takes you, I will just sing an Italian song or something like that. Okay, keep them occupied for a while.
You know what? Now I'm going to have to try and listen to that while I dial now. All right, I'll call you right back.
Okay, thank you very much, folks. Stay with us, please. It seems that we have a line problem, and I think it is on his end because he just hung up and the humming went away. I would prefer to correct the situation because we do have another 50 minutes to go, and I would prefer that we have a clear line so that you can listen. So please do not hang up. Do not go away. Andy will be on the wire once again. We are talking about the default of Irish bonds, of sovereign debt, and how it affects us. Okay, here he is again. Andy, is that you?
That's me. How's that? Is that
better?
Oh,
that's infinitely better. Yeah, we have about 50 minutes to go if you want to go that long, and I would prefer to nip that in the bud now and have a clear line than struggle through this whole thing, because I don't think people would listen very long, you know, with the hum in the background. I appreciate very much that you're calling back on another line. Very good. Okay.
Oh, no problem.
You know, we do have a toll-free number now, so if you're calling on a landline, you know, please make use of it, you know, and anyway, we'll deal with that later. Okay. All right, now, what would happen if Ireland says, forget it, you know, here it is, you know, we want to default? And in fact, I think they're right in their position. I mean, you buy bonds, there's no guarantee. Anyone can default on any bond, even a AAA bond company. Something happens to the company, you're gone. And they're saying, fine, you took a risk. The risk was not worth it. We're going to default. Thank you very much. We paid you interest for your risk, and that was it. What's wrong with that?
Well, I mean, really what you'd have is a situation, you know, if you're going to, let's split hairs for a second. I mean, they're going to default regardless, just like we are. We're either going to do it explicitly where we're going to say exactly what you just said. You know, you took a risk, and we paid you a risk premium, not pound sand.
Right.
or what they can do is they can default by making the payments that are issued on that debt worthless through inflation.
Right.
The problem with a lot of these countries in Europe is they've lost their sovereignty now because basically they're at the whim of the European Central Bank. These countries don't have their own central banking operations in the traditional sense anymore.
Right.
So they're kind of held hostage a little bit by the European Central Bank. But to answer your question in a short manner, if they decided to just default on this, basically anybody who was holding one of their bonds, the bond would go from being worth whatever it was one day to being worth zero the next.
Right.
And you would see losses across the various banking entities, any kind of pension funds or mutual funds, closed-end funds, whatever. Anybody that holds one of those bonds is going to be a loser in that situation. What I would contend is, they're going to be losers anyway. But, this whole idea of, crawling away from your debt by making it worthless is much more politically palatable than the idea of just saying you're out of luck.
Right.
So,
I
think, again, it's splitting hairs, but I think you're going to get a default regardless.
Right. Well, folks, you're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. With us this evening, we have Andy Sutton. He is a chief investment advisor for Sutton Associates. We're talking about the economy. Please do call in. Our toll-free number is 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. Let us hear from you, your questions, comments, and even if you disagree, especially if you disagree. Andy, why do they say that in the event that Ireland goes, so will go Portugal, Greece, and Italy, for example, and maybe others? Why is one contingent upon the other?
Well, because basically you have a situation now where all these banking systems and financial systems are all tied together. They're all interwoven, and it's like a pile of dominoes. Mm-hmm. If you knock one down, the next thing you know, others start to go. So, for example, I mentioned any holders of Irish bonds would immediately go, they would go work from worth being, say, par,
right,
to being worth zero. If you had a big bank in, I don't know, let's pick Greece, for example, we'll pick on them. Say they had, one of their big banks had a huge amount of these bonds. Well, all of a sudden they're in trouble now because, their balance sheet is messed up. And then now they're in trouble. All of a sudden that affects somebody in France because, that French bank, Societe Generale, say they have a big holding in that Greek bank, and all of a sudden they're in trouble. So this is how it goes around, and this is kind of what happened when Lehman went down back in 2008. This thing started to ripple all over the place, and they were lucky that this happened over the weekend. It would have been a lot worse if it would have happened overnight on a Tuesday or a Wednesday or something like that. The powers that be wouldn't have had their time to cover their behinds. And we would have had ourselves an interesting time come the next morning.
Right. Well, I what confuses me, or baffles me, I should say, is the fact that they're concerned about their employment picture. Their employment picture obviously is tied in with their economy because they tax employment and whatever, and they tax businesses if they're building things and making things. But the European countries, as we are becoming more and more today here in America, mostly everything is tied in with the government. In other words, people directly or indirectly work for the government. So if you have an austerity program where you start cutting down your expenses, what you're in fact doing is increasing unemployment. Is there no way out for these characters or what? I mean, as it is for us.
Well, you see, this is the problem, and this is what I was saying before, and you hit the nail on the head. We have a situation now where the line between the private sector and the public sector is so muddied,
right,
that you've got the government involved in so many private sector, ventures or whatever you want to call them, that if the government, you take a look at our GDP, if we cut our government spending by half, imagine what that would do to our GDP.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it would be an instant depression.
Right.
And this is what has happened all over the world. All of these countries are in the same boat we are, and we're in the same boat they are. Where we've got countries and economies that are dependent on government spending, and in many cases, borrowed government spending. You can't just say, oh, we're going to cut it by 50% because it would destroy the whole system. So they really have backed themselves into a corner with this ridiculous socialist model. And that's what it is. I mean, I'm not gonna mince words here.
Right.
And we've been embracing that, and you know, a lot of people want to blame that on, you know, the past 2 years. I mean, that's just ridiculous. We've been embracing socialism since the 50s and the 60s already.
Right.
It just wasn't cool to say it back then. You know, as you well know.
Right.
But this is what happens. You back yourself into a corner, and now, well, how do you disengage? It's not going to be pretty, no matter how you decide to try to do it.
Well, you know, it just seems to me that we take today's environment and we compare it to the 1930s, and I think that's a gross misstatement. And I won't get into that because I can talk for 6 hours on that, and I'll you'll have to hang up. But it seems like back then we had tariffs were erected to protect industry, but we're not doing that now. We're not going to have tariffs, but we're going to deflate our currency, you know, so we make our products more attractive to everybody else. Are we not doing playing the same game, only using a different vehicle?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're right. You know, a lot of people, you know, just make this, you know, blanket comparison between the 1930s and now. And there's a lot of big differences between the 30s and now. And the biggest one was that, you know, we actually had a piggy bank. Back
right.
in the 1930s,
right.
we actually had some national savings that we could draw from. You know, we were kind of, you know, not to as great of an extent, but we were kind of in the same position that China is right now. You know, if their economy starts to stumble a little bit, they have this huge piggy bank that they can dip into, and they can stimulate the economy. And you can argue all day about whether they should do that or not, but the point is they don't have to go out and borrow it from the rest of the world to do it. They can do it internally. So, you know, that's probably not as bad of a thing as what we've been reduced to. You know, we have to go out with our hat in our hand and borrow it from the rest of the world and then spend it away. But we're not protecting industry here, really. We haven't, you know, and the problem there is we can't. You know, what are we going to do? We're going to say to the Chinese, all right, we're going to tariff all of your stuff that comes in, and we're going to put quotas and all of the goods
right.
that you import to us. Well, all of a sudden, now the shelves at Walmart are empty.
Yeah.
You know, and China could turn around and they could say, you know what? Fine, you guys pound sand. We're going to trade with Brazil and India and our other trading partners, and we've got this huge domestic demand that's been ramping up over the years. You know, we're just going to consume our own production here, and we'll maybe kick it back a little bit, and, you know, so we don't overheat. But you know, you guys can hang in the wind.
Right.
And they can do that. And a lot of people, you know, especially in the mainstream, you know, these economists will get on and they'll say, oh, well, they need us. They don't need us. I mean, that's a joke. Let's get that straight right now. They don't need us. We need them.
That's right.
They don't need us.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't have the flexibility and the leverage and the ability to you know, throw down the gauntlet on them. You know, there's this whole thing about, you know, Tim Geithner and Obama and these other guys are saying, oh, you know, we're going to get tough with China. You're not going to get tough with China, all right? That, you know, about the currency. You know, that's a joke. And, I could go on for 6 hours about that. You know, but that's the situation where we don't
right.
have the leverage and the maneuvering power and the maneuvering room to do some of these things that we used to be able to do just because of the fact that we borrow from everybody. So,
right.
so we're beholden.
Right. Have you seen that news release of the one passenger car from China?
I did, yeah. Pretty interesting.
I want to buy one. No, in fact, I want to buy four. I think they're like big pens. They're disposable. I was just trying to think if in fact, first of all, we would never allow them to come to the United States. It would absolutely ruin our entire industry. But if they did, it would be anyway. I was just. What's your take on that car? You have any opinion on that?
I don't know. It's a little too small for me.
but it's an excellent commuter for people who just 99% of the people you see in the morning are just going to and from work. There's one person in a car. I think they hit the nail right on the head.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're looking at it from a purely economic perspective,
right.
yeah. You know, there's a lot of waste in this country. You know, you sit out on one of these big interstates in one of these metropolitan areas, and you're going to see, like you just said, you know, a whole bunch of cars driving with one person behind the wheel, and that's it. And they're getting whatever they're getting as far as miles to the gallon and all of that sort of thing, and we're just burning it up.
Right.
So, you know, getting to down to the point where, you know, you can be a little bit more efficient and those sorts of things. You know, the Chinese aren't stupid. You know, they realize and they understand the idea of resource constraints.
Right.
And we don't get that because we're spoiled in this country.
Right, absolutely.
And we're going to get it eventually, but they're getting it now. And they're setting themselves up strategically to be in a position of advantage, you know, as these constraints become more and more prevalent in the world of commodity supplies and those types of things. And, you know, they're way ahead of the curve, you know, where that goes. And that's really, you know, when you take a look at that car, that's really, you know, a manifestation of that, of them just being so far ahead of the curve.
If you ever have the desire, buy me one of those cars. Okay. Well, folks,
Maybe we could get a container shipped over here or something like that. Yeah, we could get 100,000 of them, and we could set up little kiosks in all these, subscribed shopping malls.
Exactly, and sell them. I can see the entire world changing with that car. Anyway, folks, this is Joe Cristiano. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. We have with us this evening Andy Sutton, a chief investment advisor for Sutton Associates, and he's an economist too. We're talking about the worldwide economy. We do have a toll free number. We wish you would use it. 888-773-4496. That 888-773-4496. Call in with your questions, your comments, your criticisms, especially your criticisms. We'd love to hear from you. Andy, what is your take on what is happening with the tour, if you will, of Obama with the G20 and around the world, Indonesia, wherever he's going? What's your take on what's happening there?
Well, I mean, you've got a situation now where, you know, these guys are trying to exude some confidence and power and these types of things, and the rest of the world is not really buying it. The Germans are upset about quantitative easing. The Chinese are obviously not happy about quantitative easing. So this is a situation where, you know, the emperor has no clothes, and the rest of the world is starting to say, hey, the emperor has no clothes. And just if I could make an aside comment, you know, I got an email after the last time you and I talked from a fellow that said he was going to call in, but he didn't want to mess up our mojo. And I emailed him back and I said, you should call in because we don't have mojo. We're just two guys talking about current events and things like that. So people, if they're out there listening and they're thinking about calling, just pick up the phone. It's free. Call in, talk to us. We're just two ordinary, regular guys.
Right. Absolutely. And we really would love to hear from people. I can't tell you how many times when I eventually do hear from people, I say, how come you haven't called in before? And they'll say, well, I didn't want to interrupt what was going on. It was so interesting, or something along that lines. I said, please interrupt, you know? And I even have friends who say, oh, yeah, it was a great broadcast. I said, how come you didn't call in? They go, oh, I was listening. You know? Anyway, well, I just find I'm looking for I'm a macroeconomic economist, if you will. I take a view. I take all the way back, and I don't look at the nitty gritty. I look at the long term. You know, 40 years where we're going, the large trends and whatever. Andy, I don't see it getting any better. In fact, I the way I see it, we are trying to solve our debt problem with more debt, and this talk of austerity and cutting programs is totally unrealistic. May happen maybe 40 years from now, and it'll be much, much too little, much, much too late. Am I just a pessimist? Am I off the table or what?
Well, here's the thing. There's never been a society in the existence of planet Earth that has borrowed its way to prosperity. And I think that is probably the one lesson that most people who are convinced that we can print and spend our way out of this have failed to learn and have failed to recognize. It doesn't work that way. There are, you know, economics is not a debating society. You know, a lot of people will sit there and say, you know, oh, you know, Andy, you're one of these Austrian guys, and you'll argue with the Keynesian guys, and it's a nice debate, and, you know, but nobody's really right. Well, that's not true.
I agree.
Somebody is right, and there are rules. And when you break the rules, there's consequences. And we're seeing the consequences now. And just because they haven't hit America yet, automatically there's a lot of people that say, well, they never will, because they haven't, it hasn't happened yet, so that means it's not going to. And that's just ridiculous. You know, the people in France and the people in Ireland and Spain and Italy and all those other European countries that are starting to have problems now, they never thought it was going to happen to them, too. They thought that they could work 10 hours a week and have 10 weeks of vacation a year and retire at age 50 on the government, and it was just going to go that way in perpetuity. And that's just ridiculous. It doesn't work that way.
That's right.
And the sooner people in this country understand that, the sooner it might have a chance of getting fixed. But the problem is, you start taking a look at the food stamp rolls, the different types of government assistance rolls at the state, local, federal level. You start looking at all these programs, all these people that are dependent on this government spending. It goes right back to what we said before. You know, some politician stands up and says, by the way, we're going to cut this, we're going to cut that, we're going to cut the other thing. There's going to be another house cleaning, and they're going to put the people in that they think are going to do what is in their best interest.
Right.
And when you have the majority of people that are sucking off of the system, and I understand, like, Social Security, people paid into that, but the point is they're getting money from the government.
Right.
The government stole their contributions. That's the reality. So you have people that are getting money from the government. They're going to vote for people that are going to continue
right.
those disbursements. They're not going to be quick to vote for people that are going to cut those disbursements.
Right.
You know, this whole election that we just had was probably a bit of an aberration, because I think there was a lot of furor and a lot of anger. But if you notice, the next day after the election was over, a lot of these guys that won these big elections and were doing a lot of big talk and were saying, we have to temper expectations here. But they know they're not going to do anything.
Right.
They're going to kick the can down the road just the same as the last bunch did.
Right.
You know, and that's how it works.
Yeah. I was particularly disappointed with Rand Paul. He had made a statement, I read in an article, where he said, well, you know, he's against the extension of the 99ers on unemployment, what they call the 99ers, those who have been on unemployment for 99 weeks, for another 26 weeks. However, he would approve it if the Democrats would agree to some sort of spending cut of $5 to $6 billion, you know, to offset this. Well, you know that game. We'll extend it another 26 weeks, and that those spending cuts will be talked about in committee, and then they'll die a natural death somewhere. We won't see anything. And I was so disappointed that he didn't take the position his father would take. I said, no, what part of no don't you understand? Period. And I can see that, and he was supposed to be, you know, anyway.
Well, this is the thing, and you nailed it again. You know, that's not how you dig your way out of this hole, by saying, all right, well, we're going to extend this another 26 weeks, and that's going to cost X number of dollars, and we're just going to cut X, that same amount from somewhere else. All right, so net on net, we're in the same boat that we were before. That doesn't help get us out of it. You know, this is the problem, though. All right, so you've got people that are unemployed for 99 weeks. They're going into week 100. They're heading on 2 years without a job. You cut them off. All right, now what happens? You're going to have more foreclosures, less government or less consumer spending. All of these types of things. We have interwoven our government with our economy to the point where it is going to be exceedingly difficult to extricate ourselves mm-hmm. from the government and get those two separated properly into the containers that they belong in again. It's going to be very difficult to do that. It has to be something that would be done slowly. And the problem is, with these crises around the globe accelerating, I'm not sure we have that kind of time. We've really backed ourselves into a corner here.
Well, you know, they have all these esoteric statements that they make, words that they use, you know, such as quantitative easing, and I don't know where that came from. I've never learned that in school. I've never heard that before, and quite frankly, it makes no sense. But it sounds so good, you know. It's like the war on terror, you know. It just sounds right, and so we just keep on repeating it. I just do not understand how we're going to get out of this, and if we are not going to get out of this, what are we looking at? What are we looking at here in the United States? I mean, let's be real. What's going to happen, Andy, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, you have a situation. I mean, let's assume for a minute that we just kind of continue doing what we're doing here and we don't make any meaningful adjustments or anything like that. We just kind of run into the wall. There'll be a crisis. What'll trigger it? Who knows? There could be 100 triggers.
Right.
It could be the Chinese. It could be an energy shock. It could be a food shock. It could be any number of things. But something's going to shock this system. It's going to be like Nassim Taleb's black swan. Only it won't be a black swan. It's going to be a white one because there's so many of them.
Right.
So you're going to have something that's going to trigger basically what happened over there in Europe. You know, you might have a bank failure. It might be a big one. I mean, it could be another Lehman-type situation. I mean, there could be 100 things that could trigger. But once it's triggered, you're going to see ramifications. You could see price controls. We've got a history of doing that. We could have a bank holiday. We have a history of that. You know, I'm just saying things that these are things we've done before in America. You know, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm not one of these people that's out on the internet whispering rumors, oh, there's going to be a bank holiday on December 1st, you know, or anything like that. I'm just telling people what we've had happen in this country before. When you have a shock to this system and, you know, say we get caught off, all of a sudden the Fed, they become the buyer and the only buyer of Treasury bonds, and you have immediate hyperinflation. You know, then you would have that to deal with. You would have shortages. You know, the government would try to impose price controls. Obviously, as soon as they do that, there's going to be a shortage of whatever they impose the price control on. So, I mean, take your pick, whether it's gasoline or, you know, whatever. That's a situation that could very well have to be dealt with. I mean, I'm just giving you what are typical responses to these types of situations. There's a lot of countries around the world right now that are already worried about soaring food prices. China's one of them. There was just an article in the Financial Times today, and they've been running an article about every other week, 2 weeks, give or take, on this whole situation with food stockpiles and inflation and possible shortages in different spots around the globe. So I don't know if they know something the rest of us don't, or what the situation is there. But these are the kind of things that could happen. And I'm not trying to scare people, but I'm just trying to think outside the box. And kind of parlay some things that, you know, might be likely responses to this whole kind of thing. There's too much debt. If it gets called, you know, in one way or another, whether it's, you know, somebody starts dumping bonds for whatever reason, or somebody starts dumping dollars, or, you know, something along those lines, you know, that could trigger a whole cascade of events. And, I mean, that's really what we have to worry about. And this is why I point to Europe and say, this is a really, there's a lot of lessons to be learned here, because we're in the same boat they are. And the only reason that we haven't had that happen here already is because the dollar still has the reserve currency status. And that foundation is shaking
right.
as well. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of cause for concern with regards to that. And I think just whistling down the road and pretending everything is fine, like you see a lot of going on right now, I think that's irresponsible. I don't think it's our job to get on here and scare the daylights out of people, but I do think we have to be honest and we have to tell people, you know, what has happened in the past and what some likely responses to these types of situations might be.
Right. Well, you know, I was a teenager, because I'm very old, by the way, Andy. But I was a teenager when...
Yeah, you're ancient.
I really am. I'm really... It's amazing. I can't even believe how old I am. I was on the telephone with someone the other day trying to get something squared away on one of my accounts. And she said, "When were you born?" She said, "You sound so young." I said, "Well, thank you so much." I mean, that really made my day. But... remember the race riots, the Watts race riots, were back in the 60s?
Yep.
Well, they had the riots in Harlem at the same time, and they were in Chicago, South Side Chicago, all over the United States. Now, the fabric of society was ripping at that point in time, and I was there. In fact, I got out of the subway, and I had a National Guard soldier with a shield over his head and my head, and we jogged to my office, to my factory where I was working when I was a kid. I mean, we were talking about the entire fabric of society just collapsed. And so it's not that it can't happen or it's a wild thought, it's unimaginable. It has happened already. It just happened in isolation. It happened among certain ethnic groups in certain areas. But now we have the same situation and the same frustration building up, but across the entire nation with tens of millions of people, you know, in dire straits. So I the thing is, I don't see it's such a wild story or guess to say, well, this could happen. In fact, it's in my opinion, it very likely could happen. Especially
yeah,
if there's
I mean,
a bank holiday.
I would agree with that. Yeah. I mean, the thing that you have to come back to is human nature, and this is why history is such a valuable tool, because human nature really doesn't change. And you're right, you know, the race situation, that affected certain groups of people. This is something that's going to affect everybody, whether you're on the side of those individuals who, you know, are receiving the benefits that might be cut drastically and suddenly, or you're on the other side, you're the people that have been paying for them. This affects everybody because we all use dollars. So obviously if there's a dollar crisis, you know, if the Fed's just going to go and they're going to print that into oblivion, there very well could be a dollar crisis. There should be, really, when you think about it. That's going to affect everybody because everybody uses them. So you're absolutely right. And the human nature, the instinct is to be very protective and you know, take whatever measures are necessary to protect one's own, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So the fact that these things have already happened before in isolation should be cause for concern for people because, you know, this is something I don't think it's going to take a lot to trigger.
Yeah.
You know, when you start talking about 60 million people on food stamps, I mean, that's a huge number. That's
yes.
20% of the population.
Right.
You talk about all these people that are on unemployment, and, you know, no matter what BLS happens to say, we know there's a lot of fudging that goes on there. That's really not getting any better. At least, in the aggregate, maybe at the margins here and there, in certain areas, it's getting a little bit better. But, you know, really in the aggregate, it's not. So that obviously is a situation. People are having a hard time making mortgage payments. Foreclosures are still high. So all of these things that have been going on for the last couple of years are still going on. And that means that more and more people are getting moved closer and closer to that point where they're going to get desperate, and that's
right.
Just the reality of it.
Right.
I mean, it's not rocket science. It's reality.
Well, since we're talking doom and gloom at the moment, well, let's keep in the doom and gloom arena. What would happen if Monday morning we all got up, turned on the news, and we said, and there's announcements, and ladies and gentlemen, today there was an unannounced or an unofficial bank holiday, and let's assume for a second in this scenario, your old dollars, you'll now be given new dollars for your old dollars at a ratio of 4 to 1. Okay, so you have a 75% devaluation of the dollar. Give us some idea of what you envision, how that would affect people. What would it affect? What would happen in that scenario?
Well, if you have a 75% devaluation of the currency, basically what you're saying is prices would remain stable, and for every $4 you had before, now you would have only one.
Right.
Well, basically everybody's wealth would be reduced by 75%. That would cause immediate problems. Obviously, the holiday itself, people wouldn't have access to cash. They wouldn't be able to tap the ATMs. And there was actually something I couldn't confirm it, but there was a number of people that were saying that something was going on with the ATM network about 2 weeks ago where it actually went down for a number of hours. I don't know if I couldn't confirm it, so I don't know. Somebody called me and told me about it. But if anybody knows anything about that, they should call in and, you know, give us some more information on that. But, I mean, obviously money would be unavailable. And, I mean, think about it. You know, you're sitting there and all of a sudden you got a 75% haircut in your paycheck, basically. That's going to put most people
into the red. Obviously, most people are going to immediately have a shortage. They'd have to tap out what little savings they had left, and then things would have to start being cut.
Well, doesn't this...
Discretionary spending would fall off a cliff. That would be the first thing that would go. And mortgages would stop being paid. People would just stop paying mortgages, credit card bills, all of that kind of stuff. People would buy food and gas, and that would be about it.
It's impossible for me to even wrap my arms around that, to get even a general idea, because many older folks have been convinced that, you know, once you're 65, most of your money should be in cash and bonds, and they're still advocating that. Financial advisors are doing that. They're not asking anyone or suggesting to anyone to take your money and put it in safer havens that would counteract a dollar devaluation or hyperinflation, like energy, for example, or commodities or precious metals or whatever. They're still not doing that. So a lot of these people who are retired with a comfortable amount of money in bonds, all of a sudden would be relatively impoverished. And they're the people who have the money today, and even they'll be broke. It's just so far reaching. It is just very difficult for me to imagine what the end result would be, what would happen to the very fabric of society if all of a sudden, as broke as we are, we're four times more broke. I just can't get my arms around that one.
Yeah, there's a fellow that does a really good job. His name's Gerald Celente.
Oh, yes.
He does a really good job of analyzing the human nature and the likely reactions. But I can tell you this much from the perspective of, you know, you're 65 now and you should be 75% rotated into bonds and cash. A lot of these advisors and a lot of my contemporaries, and I'm not saying I'm any kind of genius or anything like that. Don't get me wrong. But a lot of these people are stuck in the 80s and 90s, and that was the old paradigm. When you were young, you should have stocks, blue chip stocks, growth, whatever, you know, and you had the little pie chart. Right. And then when the last kid leaves the house, and then you've got the empty nest, then you should start rotating, you know, 50-50 or 60-40 or whatever whatever the pie chart said then. And then by the time you hit Social Security, you should be all in treasury bonds and CDs and cash. Well, the problem is, you know, you want to sit there and clip treasury coupons, you're going to go broke.
Right.
You want to sit there and clip CD coupons, you're going to go broke.
Right.
It's a pittance what's being paid right now. I mean, rates have spiked here over the last 2 weeks or so. But still, I mean, when you consider what they've been and what the cost of living increases have been over the last 10 years, bonds have been a terrible investment. You know, unless you're going to be one of those guys that's going to try and buy and sell them, and that's a whole other ball of wax.
Right. Yeah,
the bottom line is, the only thing worse than a dollar or a bond is another promise. That's really what's going on here. The government's saying we're so broke that we have to keep issuing this debt, but this debt's as good as gold.
Yeah.
This promise is good because we're the United States government. I mean, how stupid do they think people are? I mean, really.
Well, they've gotten away with it this far. Let me just break
for
station.
This is the thing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Andy. Finish your thought. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Yeah, this is the thing that really torques me. You know, we think, well, we've gotten away with it this long. Well, that automatically means that we're just going to be able to get away with it forever.
Yeah.
I mean, that's infantile logic right there. But this is what goes on. This is what passes for, you know, news reporting, financial reporting, financial news, economic news, this kind of stuff. You know, think about it this way. I mean, this is how stupid we've gotten. We, as a country, have elected people, and this has been going on a while now. It's not just, you know, Obama and his bunch. This was, you know, the last bunch, too. We have elected people to represent us that are going to the Chinese and saying, hey, we want our dollar to be worth less.
Right.
And people, their ears went up, and they're like, what? Well, what are you talking about, Andy? Well, when they sit there and they say, hey, you know, China, you need to let your currency appreciate, that means that ours is depreciating.
Right.
So we've elected people, and we have people in the media that are screaming at China and saying, We want you, in fact, we demand that you make our currency worth less.
Right.
Now, think about how ridiculous that is. And any other guy like Hank Paulson, every time somebody asked Hank Paulson about the dollar, he would robotically say, a strong dollar is in the national interest. I support the strong dollar. And it was like a robot.
Yeah.
Every time somebody mentioned the dollar, a strong dollar is in the national interest. You know, and then he would go and say, by the way, China, you need to appreciate your currency. I mean, this is where we're at. This is how ridiculous this is.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's that simple.
Right. You know, I have, in the interest of full disclosure, I have two businesses. And I have enough money in the businesses, you know, for working capital, inventory, blah, 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 blah. You know, and I have to keep a little extra money in there. Other than that, I have absolutely no cash whatsoever. I own absolutely no bonds. I have a sizable portfolio. I get letters from the likes of Fidelity and Van, you name it. I get letters from them saying, Mr. Cristiano, this is a written, they call it red letter. You know, this is a red letter alerting you that at your age, your allocation must be changed. You're at high risk, et cetera. And I laugh at these things because what they want to do is they want to put me in cash and bonds. And I have zero, literally zero cash. I have big accounts, Andy, where the cash, I have to have some cash balance. It's like, you know, $16.43. You know, because I just about, I make it so that I just have enough so I don't go into deficit. And that's it. And they all tell me I'm crazy. And yet, when I visited Fidelity the other day to ask them a question, they have an office here. You know, they called up my account and they called up their account, you know, simulated that if I had my money in their account, I beat them 15 times over. Not 15%, 15 times over. Anyway, but that's I won't brag about that. But I thought that was kind of interesting, you know. But yet, and then they tell me I'm allocated incorrectly. And my point being is that if you listen to most financial advisors, they will tell you to do exactly the wrong thing. And I don't understand that.
Yeah, it's the mob mentality.
Yeah, I don't understand
that. It's the herd mentality.
Yeah. Well, also it's a matter of safety. It's a big company. They can't tell people to do things that they perceive as risky.
Well, you know, a lot of these guys, like I said, they never got out of the 80s and the 90s.
Right.
Yeah, they're still stuck in that old paradigm. They still haven't figured out that the world changed.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know why that is. I have no idea. I'm not going to speculate. I know a bunch of these guys. I'm friends with some of them. And they'll sit there and they'll spew this stuff. And I'm, what are you talking about? You know, you got your people killed over the last 10 years doing this.
Right.
Oh, but it's coming back. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know, and that's what you get. Well, it's coming back.
Right. Yeah.
Well, what about the last 10 years? You know, that's, I don't find that to be acceptable. You know, to sit there and tread water for 10 years while the cost of living goes up 7-8% a year for sure for at least the first 8 or 9 years, you know, on average, probably higher. You know, that's not acceptable.
Right. Well,
but, a lot of these folks are stuck in that old paradigm.
Well, here's the thing that I don't understand, and maybe this will ring it with our listeners, in that we had an actually bad economy. The dot-com bubble sort of helped things out a little bit, and then we had a real estate bubble that helped out things a little bit. And, of course, we throw in a couple of wars, which keep things, factories going. And all of that, and then we had a cash bubble, a currency bubble. Well, These were all false bubble economies, and now that it's all deflating, basically, and getting back to reality, people saying, well, we have to get things back to the way things were. And I'm saying to myself, no, that's one thing you don't want to do. Could you explain that to our listeners?
Well, exactly. People want to get it, you know, everybody, they put so much emphasis on the housing market, and they've kind of backed off that now. I mean, obviously, the Fed is still monetizing mortgage debt. They're still buying the bonds, the mortgage bonds, to keep rates low and try to push as many people as they can into housing. But I think they realize that it's not going to work. They're not going to be able, you know, you just don't get to go back to 2005.
Right.
You know, they created such a distortion in that market that it's going to take years, maybe even decades, till that all works itself out. And, you know, a lot of people don't understand the selling pressure that's going to come into that market on the supply side, just because of the fact that you have all these baby boomers that are going to start moving into, you know, with kids, they're going to start moving into assisted living, and they're going to, you know, start doing all of these types of things, and that's going to put more pressure on this market. And where are the buyers going to come from?
Right.
I mean, seriously, where are the buyers going to come from?
Right.
You know, and they cause such a huge distortion there. It's not going to get fixed, and I think they're starting to realize that. So they're trying to move on to the next thing. Well, how can we keep this thing going? Well, we need more government spending. Well, we can't just do cash stimulus anymore, because every time we do that now, people just pay down credit card bills. You know, like they did with the last $168 billion that they threw around there back in the beginning of 2008.
Right. Yeah.
People, they saved the money or they paid down debt. Well, the government doesn't want that. They want you to go out and spend it.
Right.
And, you know, so they're going to say, well, you know what, if you're not going to do it, then we'll do it for you. And
right.
That's exactly what's going
right.
on.
Very
the government
point.
Is going to spend in your place if you refuse to do
right.
it. They will consume for you on your behalf, and you will pay for it. And that's basically kind of the model that we're advancing right now.
Right. Folks, you're listening to Andy Sutton. He's our guest here at Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. We are talking about the economy. We haven't had any calls this evening, which is very disturbing to me, and I'm very upset because of it. I want you to know. Our call-in number now is toll-free, 888-773-4496. If some of you are used to the old number, we still have the 646-652-4620. Call in on either one, but do please call with your comments, your questions, or your criticisms, please. The energy sector, there is much speculation. Oh, by the way, one other thing, we do have an email address. It's comments@libertytalkradio.com. If you want to send Andy a question for Andy, you can send it to me and I'll pass it on to him. Send it to comments@libertytalkradio.com. Thank you. A lot is being said about energy creeping up. In the early part of 2011, we can see $90 a barrel oil. We can see $3.50 or $4 gallon gasoline. There's some people, Ron Paul included, saying if you liked $4 a gallon gasoline, you'll love $8 a gallon gasoline. Now, he's not saying tomorrow, but he's saying down the road. What is your take on it? And also, I'd like your a few comments from you on natural gas.
Well, you know what? Why don't I start with natural gas? Just because there was, you know, this was something I talked about in our last newsletter, and I'll just kind of give a little bit of an overview of that. There's been some pretty big action in the natural gas sector, and what has been really amazing about that is it's happened in light of the fact that natural gas prices are in the toilet.
Right.
And there's a lot of things being done under the assumption that natural gas prices are going to be at least double what they are right now, if not triple or quadruple. And there's a lot of people, and I'm talking not just ordinary average people, I'm talking about corporate CEOs, CFOs, and what have you, that are making allocation and strategic decisions right now that are operating under those assumptions that they're going to have much higher natural gas prices. So that might be a word to the wise. If you're heating your home with natural gas, or, you know, your electricity is fired by natural gas plants and what have you, you know, that might be something that's kind of tucked under your hat there and think about a little bit. You know, as far as the oil situation goes, you've got a situation here where obviously quantitative easing comes out, gold goes through the roof, oil takes off, and, you know, you're going to have a situation where those are actual scarce goods. Those are tangible items. They cannot be replicated ad infinitum by a computer or a printing press like the U.S. paper ticket dollar. So people are going to chase those things. You have a situation where you have what used to be the third world is having an increasing standard of living. That means
right.
they're going to consume more energy. They're going to consume more of certain types of commodities, whether it's rare earth metal or copper or aluminum or zinc or any of these types of things. We are consuming more of these substances, and they're getting harder and harder to come by, or at the very least, we're not able to grow or find our supplies enough to keep up with these things. And this is why I was talking before about China really being ahead of the curve with regards to these resource constraints. So let's frame this. You have an increasing amount of dollars at certain levels of the economy that are chasing essentially limited supplies of these commodities, and it's driving the price up.
Right.
So, you know, and we're burning it. We're not burning it, you know, as far as, you know, oil goes. We're not burning it like we were back in 2005 and 2006 by any stretch of the imagination. But we're still burning it at a solid clip. We're still running a deficit of about 2 million barrels a day between what we produce and what we bring in from imports and what we're burning up. So that, who knows where that's being pulled from, whether it's Strategic Petroleum Reserve or whether the numbers are inaccurate or whatever the situation is. There's a huge disconnect there. That is going on. That's, you know, we write about that, you know, every other month pretty much and give an update on that situation. So that's going on. And you've got China and others making strategic deals with, you know, Venezuela, Iran, Saudi Arabia, some of these places to lock down supplies of oil and to pay whatever, you know, contracted price they arrive at with those entities to get supplies of oil for themselves. And what's happening is it's going to start to starve the rest of the market, and you're going to see prices go up. So, yeah, $8 gas, I don't know. We've already had $4 gas, so we've been there, we've done that. It certainly put a damper on the economy. It'll do so again. The public's ability to spend past that is even more hampered than it was the last time we had $4. So we see that again maybe next summer, maybe before that. I don't know what's going to happen. That's certainly going to really put a throttle on things. The government will have to spend even more on our behalf if we're going to continue to cling to this ridiculous model.
Right, right. Well, you know, I guess that then that Chinese automobile single-seater seems to make sense. I think they said it got 239 miles to the gallon. We better start buying those things up, Andy, and start our own franchise here in the United States.
Yeah, like I said, we should get a container ship, and we should have maybe 100,000 of those things delivered. And, you know, you and I will set up little kiosks. You know, there's a whole bunch of retail shopping space that's basically for rent right now. We could probably get the shopping space pretty cheap. We could set up, like, little showrooms at all these malls around the country. You know, you and I could go into business here.
You wonder something? I don't think we'd have to do that. I think they would be sold before they got off the ship.
Yeah,
quite frankly.
We'd be out of luck.
Andy, we have about 1 minute left. I want to leave that minute for you to tell them a little bit about what you do, your newsletters, your services, and whatever. And why don't you take the next 60 seconds or so to do that, okay?
Well, I mean, as far as people probably gathered who have been listening, and I hope the lack of calls is due to the fact that people were paying rapt attention and not just hanging up on us here.
Yeah.
I'm not really a traditional advisor. I don't advocate 75% bonds at age 65. I do things a little bit differently. I do them with the things that we talked about over the last hour in mind. And that means we do a little bit of this, we do a little bit of that. I'm a big advocate of commodities and precious metals. I help clients with that. We publish a newsletter service called The Sensible Investor. We talk about these things in more detail. I do a lot of research. I've got a couple of economic models that have been really nailing some things. The latest signal we got from our interest rate model really hammered the recent spike in bond yields. So we've got a lot of that kind of stuff going on in our newsletter. We maintain a model portfolio. And we try to help people navigate what's going on here. And people are concerned, and they're getting more concerned. And that's what we do. We listen to those concerns, and we try and come up with solutions that are gonna help people reach their goals. And they're not always your traditional solutions,
right,
but oftentimes they're not. So, I mean, that's kind of in a nutshell what we do here.
Yes, and I have followed some of you. You know, I subscribe to your newsletter. I do follow some of your – I take some of your ideas and your recommendations, and so far I'm not disappointed, and you've been right on. Well, Andy, it's almost time for us to shut down. I'd like to thank you very much for being our guest. I know it's a long haul for 1 hour for you to speak, and we certainly appreciate you being in our show, and we hope that you will continue to be our guest the third Wednesday of every month.
Joe, I look forward to it. I appreciate you having me on, and I'll gladly be back every month as long as you're willing to have me.
Okay, Andy, thank you very much, and good night.
Good night, Joe. Take care.
Bye. Oh boy, I really enjoy Andy Sutton. I just thoroughly enjoy him. I just think he's great. This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Rant Shakers Audiology for their financial support. French Acres Audiology is a family hearing practice at 3227 East 31st Street in Tulsa. They may be reached at area code 918-749-7711. Well, we would also like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated. Your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. They control the ride and your every move. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal." The government hates competition. With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.